Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. This is your trigger warning. This podcast is raw. It is real, and it doesn't sugarcoat what it means to survive trauma, abuse, mental health battles, or even the aftermath of living in survival mode for too damn long. What you hear on Survival Mode Disrupted includes unfiltered stories, graphic details, and a vulnerable truth that may trigger some of the audience. Please prioritize your emotional safety. If something feels too heavy, pause. Breathe. Come back when you're ready or not at all. Your healing is yours to honor. These episodes are based on lived experience, not therapy sessions or clinical advice. Listening does not replace mental health treatment or constitute a coach-client relationship. If you're in crisis, please seek immediate help from a licensed professional or contact your local emergency services. This space is built with care, but it's also built for truth and built for disruption. Take what you need, leave the rest, and most of all, trust yourself. If this podcast speaks to your soul, you don't have to do this work alone. Feel free to join our free Facebook community for high-achieving women ready to break cycles and heal out loud. Join us at Disrupting Survival Mode on Facebook. Or grab the book that started this movement, Exiting Survival Mode, a raw step-by-step guide to help you identify, release, and rebuild from the survival patterns that have been keeping you stuck. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. I am your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and today we have Kelly. So Kelly, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you so much for holding space for me today. I'm thrilled to be here. My name is Kelly Weaver. I am calling in from outside of Chicago in a little teeny tiny farm town called Woodstock. So we've already established that across the pond, things are well in England.
Yes. I'm super excited to have you here today. Thank you for joining us. So let's kick it right off. How would you describe survival mode?
Wow, that is a really great question. Survival mode to me is that going from one thing to another, when life is just pouring on you and you cannot find something to either A, hold on to, or to ground yourself. And you're just continuing to go and go and go and grab. And it appears sometimes to be fruitless. It appears that sometimes it just, there's just no getting out of it. So that's how I would describe survival mode.
I most certainly can relate to that. I recognize myself being in survival mode for decades. So just going on with the, going with the flow, but really not in control of anything and just existing. So definitely can relate to that definition. So why don't you tell us your story to and through survival mode?
Sounds good. I was born into survival mode. And so I've had 61 years of being in survival mode. So I consider myself an expert. I have survived everything. So I am a survivor of survival mode. Though as I've gotten older, I have definitely done the work to learn how to recognize chaos and my desire for chaos versus survival. So I've done a lot of work within that. I started early. I was maybe 2 hours old. I was the first child. And my dad left us in the hospital, my mom and I in the hospital, to go to a wedding reception for one of his friends. So I was 2 hours old, and my mom, it was his first child, and he felt the need to go to a wedding. And so when we look back at, where are the roots of trauma and things along those lines, and certainly at 2 hours old, not sure that I really knew that was going on, but certainly felt that. It certainly made an impact on me at some point in time and my mom. And so that was a very interesting start to where I went. I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. Mom was an alcoholic. Dad was a rager. And I didn't, understand. I didn't understand anything about trauma that gets passed down, right? So I didn't have I guess the maturity or the understanding or the knowledge to look to see how my parents had been affected by their family traumas and so on and so forth. Now, done a lot of work understanding that, being able to release a lot of those things, and claim what's mine, reparent what I need to reparent, and so on and so forth. However, at the time, you just don't know any better. And it was survival, we worked in the restaurant industry, which was a very busy, busy, chaotic industry. So I grew up in chaos, and that became my norm, right? I didn't really know that was, I felt it was kind of different because all the other kids my age, because I was about 9 when we started the restaurant, all the other kids had friends and had play dates and sleepovers and things like that. And that was never part of my life. Mine was bussing tables, taking care of my sister and brother, making sure they got their homework done, getting them off to school. So I became a parent at a very young age. And then from that, just was expected. I was good at it. And it just became expected to be an adult at a very, very young age. So aside from being exposed to very mature concepts well before it was supposed to, and not having parents to model appropriate reactions and things like that, I was really kind of figuring it out on my own. I was in a true survival mode. I got run over by a car when I was 10. I went away to college and had an unfortunate date rape situation. And then when I came back, met my husband, got married, tried to have babies, had 7 years of infertility. Right after my infertility, we decided to adopt and had a failed adoption. And then I got diagnosed with ovarian cancer. The daughter we did adopt was diagnosed with autism. And then my husband, 2 years later, was diagnosed with glioblastoma and he died. When our daughter was 5, I was a 40-year-old widow. And at the same time, my husband was in cancer treatment. My mom had a massive stroke. And I had both of them at the same time. And then my husband passed and my mom stayed around. And then after that, as a widow, I was alone with this child who had autism. And there's not too many of us that, when we're little girls playing dolls, we think, oh, I want to grow up and be a mom of a special needs kiddo. And so that was a whole new experience, but I was the mom, so I had to figure it out. And so I did and became an expert in the area of autism, specifically my daughter, but it was able to transition into multiple other kids. And I was really good at it. And so opened a school for children with autism. It started in my basement. And because the place that we had leased, the build out wasn't completed. And bless this mother who was our very first student's mom. She was like, hey, you gave me a date. I'm going back to work. You can either babysit him or whatever you want to do, but he's all yours. And I said, okay, well, do you trust him to be in my basement with me? And she's like, absolutely. So that's where we started the school. And then when I left the school, I had built it into a multi-million dollars, like $6 million business, and with 100 employees and many, 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 many students. The stress of being a single parent of a special needs child and building a business and things like that really took a toll on me. My coping strategies from my younger years were never really formally developed, right? Food was my coping strategy, deflection was my coping strategy. So I didn't really have good coping strategies, and I've always been in an entrepreneurial position and loved every bit of it. However, this was a little bit different. You know, we had COVID that I had to manage through and leading an organization through a school nonetheless, and it was a lot. So anyway, fast forward in 2023, my body finally told me that enough was enough, and my body had a major crisis. I nearly died in June of 2023. I thought I had pneumonia. The doctors thought I had pneumonia. And it turns out that I have a very rare autoimmune disorder called antisynthetase syndrome. There's not many people that have it. I always joke, I always wanted to be special, so I got a special diagnosis. But with it came several months in the hospital, then 18 months of rehab. I needed to relearn how to walk, how to talk, how to breathe, how to shower, how to go up and down stairs. As a matter of fact, I just came from physical therapy. I'm not done with physical therapy yet, and it's been over 2 years. I'm incredibly grateful to be here and alive and spending time with my daughter. The sunsets are more beautiful, and the flowers are more vibrant, and life is much different. But it truly was the end of one part of my life and the beginning of another. I don't want to say it was a wake-up call, because that really wasn't it. It was truly a shedding of, and not shedding, like, because you can't get rid of your past, but it was a decision maybe to do it differently now that I've got another shot, you know. And so, you know, when you ask a little bit, like, you know, how did I get out of survival mode? I don't know if we ever really get out of it, right? But I think we mature and we grow and we gain new tools. And I like to use the word shedding quite a bit. The disease that I had took me out to a place where my school felt that I wasn't ca capable of my school felt I wasn't capable of leading, and I had to medically retire. And that was an awful piece to survive that. You know, here's something that I started in my basement, literally gave blood, sweat, and tears to, and it was no longer part of our lives. And along with that came loss of friendships, loss of community contact, loss of my whole entire income. And so it was a big to-do. Talk about surviving. You know, I was still in the fight of my life, and now on top of that, I didn't have a purpose, an income, a position, anything along those lines. So that was really challenging. And then once I really sat back and let it in, it became a blessing. It really became a blessing, because I don't think I would have left that lifestyle if it were up to me. Does that make sense? And I see you shaking your head. Yeah, because of my addiction to chaos from growing up into it, I wore my survival like a badge of honor. Like, give me more, give me more. I can take it, you know. And I mean, I would always say, if we're in a crisis, I'm the one you want because I can stay level-headed and so on and so forth. But in reality, I had disassociated my needs so much, or disassociated from my needs so much, and put other people's needs ahead of mine, that I was burnt out and exhausted, and just my body, because I couldn't say no, my body did it for me. So I really want people to know that that's a real thing. If you push too hard and you're not at least treading water, if you're going underwater, we at least need to get you to tread, because if not, your body will do it for you. So that's where all my trauma came from. And I mean, and then there's all the normal stuff, you know, that comes along with it. You know, like getting my teeth knocked out and you know, almost flying out of a, when I was a kid, almost flew out of a water slide thing. I came around the corner too fast and my legs shot out and I thought I was going to fly out. And I mean, those are, you know, there's all those, I have been thrown off of a horse a couple of times. So all those little T traumas, you know, happen along the way. Bad school pictures. I mean, it's all leaves an imprint on you. We come into this
Absolutely.
world as all love and all light. And the first thing that happens is after we're born, we get smacked on the butt to breathe. And so when you think about it, that's just not exactly the way that we're, that's like a rude awakening, like, hey, welcome, here you are. So yeah, so that's where I came from.
Thank you for sharing. I there was things in your story that I can absolutely relate to, like you mentioned in the addiction to chaos that we actually don't recognize that we are in the midst of, right? Like I've spoken on this podcast before, but I come from parental emotional neglect into grooming, into teenage domestic abuse. I didn't recognize how addicted I was to chaos until I was probably in my 30s. And I remember having, repeated toxic relationships and then meeting someone who was as healthy can be. No drama, no toxicity. And I didn't know what to do with that. Like, I was like, this is boring. Like, I don't know how to deal with this. And I went and sought a more chaotic situation and not recognizing that's what I was doing, right? But now that I have been trauma informed, now that I do the work that I do, I actually recognize that was my subconscious looking for the homeostasis that my experiences had created. And so many of us don't recognize that we actually seek chaos. Because it's a very subtle seeking.
I do think it's subtle until you call it on the carpet, you know. I've named my ego Chad. And so whenever I have previous ideas or whatever, and I recognize them, I'm like, okay, Chad, what are you up to? You know, we don't think that way anymore. That's not the direction that we want life to go anymore. So Chad just, because Chad's just trying to help. He's just trying to keep us, you know, where we feel safe. And to your point, calm people are not safe. Because, you know, I find that specifically younger, that I was just waiting for the other shoe to drop whenever I would meet a calm person. And I'd be like, okay, what's your deal? What are you hiding? You know, because I didn't know anybody while I was growing up that didn't have drama. Yeah, so it's a very interesting journey that we're on, right?
Very interesting. And I loved how you spoke about Chad there, because when I talk about accident survival, whether it be on this podcast or with my clients, I say it happens in three phases. The first is awareness, right? Like getting to that point where we recognize that we're addicted to the chaos. That is awareness. Then the second part is reprogramming. So even that conversation that you have with Chad, that is reprogramming. That's challenging the narratives, challenging the beliefs, ch challenging the status quo that has kept us in that chaos for such an extended period of time. And then the last piece, you spoke to it as well, was a reinvention, right? Like you had to determine who you were going to be once you had to medically retire, once you realized, like, I'm kind of in this space where I feel like I don't have any purpose, but I have control here, so I get to determine what that looks like and how I get to show up moving forward. And for a lot of us, the reprogramming and the reinvention tends to be the hardest. Especially, I know for me, like coming out of my situations, I never really knew who I was. outside of the trauma, because I had experienced compounded trauma for so long. So to be able to say, oh, I can be anybody I want to be and actually believe it, it was a big hurdle for me.
I appreciate that a lot. If we just pick retirement, if we just pick retirement alone, it is a major life change. And people struggle with retirement. You've worked 30, 40, 50 years, and you've had every minute of every day mapped out for you from meetings. You know what time you got to get up, you know what time you got to go to bed, you know what you do in the middle, you know what you do in the weekends. And so we're so scheduled and such routine beings that just to retire in and of itself opens up a whole new can of worms. We have a shift in identity when we retire. And these are all things that happen naturally when we choose to retire. I didn't get to choose to retire. I just had to retire. So in the midst of really not knowing who I was, from my body not being the same than who it was, to me not having my career, my purpose, to being now retired, and everything from the financial piece to the, loss of structure and loss of people that I worked with and things along those lines was really, really intense. It was super intense, and it was overwhelming to kind of go, all right, baseline zero, base camp. I can be and do anything that I want to be. And I don't think for me, I think I was kind of like you. I didn't know what to do because I had been so programmed, A, to, as trauma survivors, we spent a lot of time pleasing our traumatizers, and trying to do everything in our world not to make that happen again, right? And so I think that it became, for me at least, it became n not to go backwards and look at the identity that I had before all this happened, and then make the decision of what from that previous identity do I want to bring over. And I literally drew a T on a sheet, and on this side I wrote, this is who I was, and what do I want to bring over, and what do I never ever want to have happen again. And so that's how I started to create this new version of myself, this new better version. And I don't think we ever have it figured out, but I can tell you that the things that happened inside of my body were crazy wacky. The downshifting and finding sleep, or the lack of sleep that I had, changing quality of sleep, changing the ability to downregulate my nervous system, learning ways to regulate my nervous system that were not sleep, food, or more work. That disassociation piece of, I don't have time to feel this. I got to do something to numb these emotions that I've got that are going on, whether it be fear or anger or whatever the case may be. And even the good emotions I found, were scary too, because I had been in lived so long on the top half of a feelings wheel of all the sad, mad, that stuff. I wasn't in the proud and the content and things like that. So I had to learn that whole feelings wheel and begin to like relearn, or just to learn. I never learned them. When I was a kid, there was no pride moments, right? There was no, I didn't learn to feel pride until I was in the hospital at 59 years of age. So that part has been a real amazing journey. I think, I guess my biggest piece of advice for that is to go, it's all inside. What is inside. And as long as you find out who you are as a person, not who you need to be for another person, then that's really where it begins, is to go inside, because we have all the answers inside.
Absolutely. And you raised in a really important point, because especially in the trauma space, we often talk about regulating our nervous system And it's always talked about in a positive way. But you mentioned how sometimes we can regulate our nervous system in not such a positive way. So you talked about work would be an outlet, food would be an outlet. And for me, it was similar. I used to definitely bury myself in my work or anything busy so that I wouldn't have time to
100%.
sit and think. And yes, I did feel better. Yes, I was more grounded, but I still wasn't dealing with the issues. So in hindsight, like I recognize, yes, at some point I was regulating myself, but I was also creating bigger issues for myself because it was sweeping things under the carpet, packing them away neatly. And then when everything hit me, it hit me so hard because I had spent many years running away from the emotions that we don't know how to process.
Yeah, and I would agree with that 100%. And I think that is some of the work that we do to heal and to move out of survival mode can be just as frightening to do because it's all new as it is to stay there. I had a therapist, wonderful human, got me through a tremendous amount of stuff in my life. He always said to me, you know, he's like, you know what, you can't be hurt by it because it's just in memories now. There's no more physical pain that can come from it. And I agree and I disagree, right? Because sometimes those traumatic events do bring up memories of the body and how it works and how it felt in those moments. You know, I can remember smells and sights and textures from the date rape situation that no matter how I've taken away the inflammatory response of them and can now talk about them from a, I guess from a different perspective, right? When I talk about my past traumas now, it's really to help others, right? It's to say, hey, here, listen, I had a whole bunch of stuff go down, and if I can make it through, you can make it through. And so I see it as a helpful piece. It doesn't trigger me the way that it maybe did 10 years ago. However, it was for a long time, and there was so much shame around so much of the trauma. That came from the I should have been stronger. I should have done it better. Still seeking external validation when it was my internal validation that I really needed. So those pieces I think are really important. Seeking external validation has been one of the biggest awarenesses for me as a way to get out of survival mode. Does that make sense? Owning my stuff and going within and really making decisions from that place of a healed person. Like, how would I respond as a healed person? You know, would I go get cupcakes because somebody said you parked in the wrong parking spot years ago? Absolutely. I would have been, oh my gosh, I screwed up. You know, just in that victim mentality that you just can't get out of. And now it's just like, okay, cool, sorry. You
And move
know.
on. But you know, the thing is, we aren't taught, like, we are conditioned to seek external validation. A lot of
100%.
the things that keep us in survival mode ends up being conditioning, right? Like, I talk about people pleasing all the time because I was a people pleaser. I would say I'm a recovering people pleaser because I still struggle with setting boundaries in certain instances. However, when I look, like, I can pinpoint where that trauma response came from, my relationship with my father. But when you look at society as a whole, we are conditioned to keep those around us comfortable. That's a conditioning across society, right? It's consider others before you consider yourself type thing. And some of us take it to the extreme where it's people pleasing, or the other extreme where it's narcissistic because like you don't see anybody else. But it's a lot of the healing and the awareness comes from just that process of unlearning and then relearning something different. And it's like now being in this space, now being in a space where I'm trauma informed, I often think we can do so much more even in the educational space, right? Like we talk about self-love. No one tells us how to love ourselves. And if there's things like similar to like they should have budgeting classes in school, right? Like my children are homeschooled, but it's certain things that should be part of life skills and taught to us. We kind of are just expected to know it. So when we go through traumatic things, especially if we've been going through traumatic things practically since birth, we it's almost like there that's the missing piece. All of the things that we should have been taught along the way that nobody teaches unless you go and hire a coach or a therapist. It's almost like you know you need to do this, but now I gotta hire somebody to teach me because the information is not readily available, which you would think it should be. Like these are life skills. These are what makes us functioning adults, right?
And you're exactly right. It should be coming from the parents, right? It should just be a modeling of how our parents react and respond. But we've got so many generations of trauma that they didn't have parents that were good models, and they didn't have parents that were good models. And even though we are in a generation right now where trauma is the buzzword, right? And everybody's working on trauma, that's the opposite of the pendulum shift, right? So now we're producing kids that are way too emotional. And it will even itself out as long as there's enough people that want to continue this work to kind of move forward. It's becoming kind of a movement, which is good, My dad is going to be 90 coming up here in a couple of weeks. And he still does not get the concept of therapy. He doesn't understand. I'm a life coach. He does not understand what I do for a living. He cannot fathom, because he grew up in that era that men were men and manly. There was no LGBTQ. There was none of that. There was no desensitization to kids that had special needs. They were just put away in homes. So it was very sterile, if you will, and the gender roles were just so specific. Now the gender roles are just, they change on a daily basis. They're fluid, they're in flux. And so from his generation, from his perspective, it's really whacked. He just doesn't understand it. But the reality of it is that myself and my daughter are probably more to the baseline of where I think healthy is than where he has come from. And it's not wrong. It's just where that's generationally where he's come. And and when our kids, my daughter's 27, and when she's 50, 60, 70 years of age, her reality is going to look a little bit different as well, because each generation shifts it just a little bit. But doesn't matter, there's still trauma. And now we've added a whole new form of trauma, which is, the bullying that comes from being online. That didn't exist when I was young. And now, sadly, we have people taking their lives because of it. And so, yeah, we could get into a whole different discussion right here, but it's a tough landscape to navigate. And so that's when I work with my clients. It goes about the fact that we can't change the landscape. We're part of it, but we can do our part of it, and we could become the people that we want to see and be in this world. And so it really is, you doing your own thing. I think podcasts like yours that are spreading awareness and are entertaining, I've had the pleasure of listening to a couple of them, and it's just good conversation. It's just good conversation. So,
Thank you. I
yeah.
appreciate that. I appreciate the feedback. And, the reason that I started this podcast in the first place was to create a space that I needed when I was going through. I just really didn't have the awareness of just the residual impact of trauma. Like, everything was chalked up to that's who I am. And it was no reconciliation until many, many years later that no, I was operating from survival. I was. This was my survival identity. This is who I became as a result of the things that I went through. And had I known differently, I would have done differently.
Yes, I think we all would have. I think those people who are in this survival mode, whether it's addiction or finances or seeking approval or whatever the case may be, I don't think anybody likes it. I don't think anybody wants to be in those spaces. And sometimes, to your point of it being something that should be taught, some kids don't even like to learn math in school or reading in school. So it's a tough topic to teach too. I think you need to get to a place where you're really willing to do something different. When we look at addiction recovery and things along those lines, and until there's the desire is there, but to embody it and to put forth the changes is a very different thing.
Absolutely. Change only occurs when the willingness to change supersedes the willingness to remain the same. And for a lot of people, the desire is there, but it's just not strong enough. And then they just get hung up. You know what I mean? Like it, and it seems so simple when I say it like that, but that really is the truth. You really just have to get so tired of your own stuff
You
to
do.
move yourself forward. That notion of you have to hit rock bottom is kind of true. In most cases, some people don't have to go all the way to the bottom, but it's almost like you really just have to get tired. And once you're tired, then there is a way forward. Kelly, I have thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. So tell us a bit more about how we can connect with you online.
I am an old-fashioned coach. I don't do a lot of offers and things along those lines. I'm just straightforward. You had mentioned just a minute ago that you created something that wasn't available when you needed it, and you created what it was that you needed. I did the same thing. So my coaching program is really individualized, and it's about the person, and it's usually transformational times. So whether it is you're going through a life transition, such as widowhood, or such as a death, or such as retirement, or kids leaving, or job career changes. So I really work on those really difficult life transitions and transformations, specifically with women. I've worked with some men in the past too. It's a very interesting dichotomy to work with a man versus a woman on some of these pieces. But so I do have. By popular demand, I never had this. It just went up. I do have a website you can reach me at. It's kellyweaverconsulting.com. And all my information is on there. I do have social media accounts. They're brand new. And so you're not going to find a tremendous amount of content because I've built my business through word of mouth. And so I just decided to kind of throw my hat into the ring because people were saying, we need to find you more out in this area. And I said, okay. So right now it's just through a website, kellyweaverconsulting.com. And I have an email, which is kellyweaverconsulting@gmail.com. And you can find me there. I do coach in one-to-one and feel that to get the work done, it's good to be accountable. And a lot of times when I'm working with people, it's not stuff they want to share publicly in a small group coaching situation. So I do love my clients and I really want them to succeed and I really want them to move through the pain pieces, the painful part, of being in trauma, because there is a beautiful, beautiful world on the other side that we don't always get to see. And I want everybody to experience what that's like, you know? And I don't want them to have to die or nearly die to be able to see that. So my message is take time now and figure out a way to enjoy your life and prioritize yourself. And to use that trauma to help you to grow and realize that it did happen to you, but it also happened for you because you get an opportunity to use it to become the person that you're meant to be.
I
So.
love all of that, Kelly. Thank you so much. And I usually ask for one key takeaway, but I think you just gave it to us. Take time now to figure it out and enjoy life. So, thank you so much for joining Survival Mode Disrupted. And, audience, thank you for catching another episode. I'll make sure that all of that information, Keller's website is in the show notes. And I just want to remind you were not built to break. But you damn sure are not built to just survive. So disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I will see you next week. Once again, thank you for joining another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted, hosted by the Survival Mode Disruptor, Letitia. You didn't land here by accident. This conversation, it probably cracked something open. On purpose, because survival mode isn't just a phase, it's a pattern, an identity, a prison masked as strength. But here's the truth: you're not broken, you're just unfinished. So if something stirred in you today, don't ignore it, don't numb it, move with it. And I want to once again invite you to join Disrupting Survival Mode, the Facebook community where healing is loud and messy and real. I also want to invite you to buy my book, The Survival Mode Exit Plan, because your breakthrough deserves a blueprint. And if you felt seen today, be sure to share this episode with someone who needs to hear it. Like, subscribe, and drop a review. That's how we amplify the voices that need to be heard. And remember, this isn't about fixing yourself. This is about finding yourself again beneath the rubble. Until next time, choose ease, choose power, choose you. This is Survival Mode Disrupted. Let's keep shaking shit up.